afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Weird week, Tim. It's already Wednesday. Strange happenings going on the last couple days, but we're here. We apologize for the tardiness, but it's just been a busy, busy week so far. And we're here. We're ready. There's a lot to talk about. But first and foremost, Tim, how are you? New hat?
It is a new hat. Yes. Thank you for asking. I'm good. We had a couple changes in the show the last few days and stuff moving around. We also, I think we can talk about this. We have the Bleacher Report streams later in the week. John and I will be live on Bleacher Report, similar to last year. We'll be going 30 minutes on Thursday afternoon from 3 to 3:30 on the Bleacher Report app. That's Eastern Time. And on Friday, we'll be doing a full two-hour live stream on the Bleacher Report. The thing starts 30 minutes before the deadline and goes for the next 2 hours of, like, we're going to analyze the deals. We're going to talk about the rumors. We're going to break stuff down, compare the deadline to other years and what the cup contenders have done. So it'll be a lot of fun. So look out for links on that in our socials.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. It's always neat because we answer questions throughout the live stream, and Bleacher Report is, they're great. They're a juggernaut. We couldn't talk about them the last couple of years we've done it just because the company we were with wouldn't want us to, but now we're free and clear. We can do whatever we want. But thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. We're going to do a quick little, it's trade deadline season. It is, Tim, the most, where would you rank this as far as hockey excitement goes as a fan? Is it trade deadline? Is it free agency? Is it draft day? Which event gets you the most excited?
I think this is the most exciting one because the playoffs are right around the corner. Draft day is not, it's probably third in the list, especially since you kind of know where the big chips are going to fall. And then once in a while, there's a surprise, and free agency is awesome too. But the season feels so far away when that happens. This is like, okay, which teams are honest with themselves about what the contenders, which teams come in and surprise us, and then which ones do we think are going to go on in like a month and a half to dominate the postseason. So it's really exciting. So I would say this is number one.
I like free agency just because there's so much action within the first 4 hours. The condensed nature of it is amazing. And it feels like in the last, I would say, 5 years, teams have been more aggressive the weeks leading up to the trade deadline, acquiring players. So the actual deadline itself, I don't know. There are trades, but maybe they aren't as impactful as years past where you have a plethora of trades on the actual trade deadline, but it's just super exciting. As for player, I've been dealt with the deadline. It's not fun. You sit there, you go to your pregame skate, or you have a practice that day. All of a sudden, I've been on the ice many, many times where they're pulling guys off the ice. Let's go. Pregame skate. Sorry, you're out. Players are healthy, scratched, or gone before the game's over. They're just traded. So it's a weird dynamic. And the beautiful thing about it is, as a player, lots of teams on the bubble, you get a sense of where your GM wants to go. Because you're essentially in the dark. You're not involved in those conversations with the GM, the president, the coach. You're just a player and you're going doing your business. By the end of the day tomorrow, you will 100% know which direction your organization wants you to go. Do they believe you can win the Stanley Cup? They add pieces. Are you selling and you're just punting to next year? Then you feel terrible about your team. So it's an interesting dynamic where you're one of those bubble team. And when you look at the list of teams that are potentially in for the playoffs, there's a lot. So if you're a Detroit, a Columbus, all those teams that are in the East Coast, you'll know by the end of tomorrow which direction your GM wants you to go, whether it's go for the playoffs or, you know, let's go for a draft pick. So it's funny to sit on the bench if you're a player and just sit back and watch. It's 3 p.m. It's like, what are we doing? What are we doing? All of a sudden, half your team's gone. That's what it was like in Buffalo. My first year in Buffalo, we had a great team. It was a lockout year. We were going to make a push for the Stanley Cup. We faltered at the start. And all of a sudden, Robin Regier gets traded. Jason Palmaville gets traded. Ryan Miller gets traded. Everybody guts the whole team. And so we show up the next day after the trade deadline. It's like, oh, we suck now. We're really bad now. Like, we were a bad hockey team. Like, we were okay before Christian Ehrhoff. We had a good team, Tim. Then we show up literally the next day. I went from, like, on the bubble, healthy scratch. I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to get a lot of ice time now. Like, this is great. But we just, our team got gutted. Tyler Myers, Drew Stafford. It was a complete gut job by the GM. And then it showed up the next year because it was the tank for McDavid year. And they really wanted to get Connor McDavid, and we sucked. And we didn't get him. Edmonton ended up getting, obviously. But it's going to be fun, Tim. And that's tomorrow. But like I said earlier, teams are already making trades. They're already pulling the trigger. And there's some trades to talk about. My former team, the Chicago Blackhawks, I would say made the most aggressive trades to date and they had a trade with the Florida Panthers. What are the details, Tim, of this big, big trade?
The Panthers acquired Seth Jones, who we've been talking about for many years, and a 2026 fourth round pick from the Hawks for Spencer Knight, friend of the show, young goaltender, 23 years old, and a 2026 first round pick. So that's next year. Some details here. The Hawks retained $2.5 million on Seth Jones for the next five seasons. So it's going to be on the books, but that's 2.5 out of 9.5. So that my math is, if that's right, $7 million off the book. I think this is a massive win for both teams. I think for sure it's a big win for Chicago. You've been trying to move this guy. He asked for a trade formally last week or the week before. You get him off the books. You don't have to retain much of his salary, because usually you see these big deals, in order to happen, they have to eat up half. And that's not the case here, which is a huge win for them. And you get a first round pick, and you get what could become their franchise goalie. So huge win for them, but also Panthers. It's not going to be a high first round pick. You Spencer Knight isn't playing because you got Bobrovsky, and you go get a legit, maybe they're, depending on how you look at the lineup, third or second best defenseman who can log a ton of minutes. He's been playing 25 minutes a night in Chicago. He plays all situations. He's a big body. So I think both teams win, and it's really exciting that this already happened.
Yeah, a team that's winning now in their Stanley Cup window gets a really good defenseman. And we give Seth Jones a hard time just because we base his performance based on his salary, which was $9.5 million. And when you're in that rarefied air, we expect you to do a lot. And he wasn't doing what a $9.5 million defenseman does. But in the grand scheme of things, when you look at all the defensemen in the NHL, Seth Jones is the top defenseman. He is in the top 30, I would say, defensemen in the NHL. And when you can throw him alongside Aaron Ekblad, Gustav Forsling, they got Mikola, you got Kulikov, that already strong defensive core gets that much stronger. And I think people forget Seth Jones is only 30 years old. He's been in the league for a million years because he started so young, but he's a good young defenseman who will take over this Florida Panthers defenseman team when old man Eric Ekblad leaves next year. By the way, Aaron Ekblad is only 29. So I was making a little joke there that nobody picks up because the kid's only 29, but he's been in the league a million years like Seth Jones. So the Panthers win now, get this guy. You have to give up a first rounder, which is, like you said, essentially a second rounder. And the Chicago Blackhawks, I don't know what Kyle Davidson did to get this deal done. It's a beautiful deal for them. They get the goaltender of the future, Spencer Knight. I don't remember that interview at all, but I'm sure he was a great kid. But they get Spencer Knight. He comes out, saves 41 of 42 shots against the LA Kings. Great first showing for that team. And you pair him up with some young bucks on that team to build for the future. And you don't retain, like you said, that's a pittance. $2.5 million. That's nothing. The salary cap's going to be $100 million in a couple years. That's easy as pie. This is a great deal for the Chicago Blackhawks. I think he knocked it out of the park. I was saying you could give Seth Jones away for free. Get that cap off of your books. When he signed that deal 4 years ago, everybody and their brother was like, woof, Tim, what are we doing giving this guy $9.5 million? And you get out from under that deal, you get a great young goalie, a great, great young goalie. They got Laurent Brossoit. They got to figure out what to do with Peter Mrazek. And this is, we'll talk about that in a second. But just grading this trade, Tim, I think it's one of the rare times where the team that's rebuilding gets a great young player that is going to be an impact player next year, if not this year. And the team that acquires the best player, Seth Jones will make an impact on this team immediately. So I give both teams an A. It's a win-win for both teams.
Yeah, the Panthers are excited. Bill Zito was just praising him. Obviously, he gave up quite a bit for him. And even Barkov said, quote, he's not going to be a rental, that's for sure. He's here for a long time. That's awesome. He's one of the best defensemen in the world. Playing against him is always tough. He's good at both ends of the puck. To add a guy like that is unbelievable. So big addition to them is going to be one of those rich get richer situations. And how the trade went down, and your friend Pat Boyle actually was the one who reported this. Seth and his agent, obviously, they requested a trade. But they only gave the Blackhawks two teams that he was willing to be traded to. One was the Dallas Stars. The other was obviously the Florida Panthers. The Dallas Stars weren't interested. I don't know if it was an asking price thing or just were not interested in the player. So that only left one option. And the fact that if this is true, that Davidson had only one option and still got the deal that he did, eating only 2.5, getting Spencer Knight, getting a first, is a huge win for him. And you go back and you look at some of the moves he's made, like getting Frank Naser for Kirby Dach and some other ones like that. He's done really, really well the last couple of years.
Isn't it amazing how easy it is for a GM to do their job when stuff doesn't leak into the media? and things don't get out and a player's demands don't get out to the other GMs, because if Bill Zito knows that, you know, he, Seth Jones only wants to go to Florida, he's going to fleece JT Miller. All these things, you know, it just makes it so much easier. So good for GM, good for Kyle Davidson, good for the player, good for everybody involved. And the one knock I will say on Kyle Davidson last year, Peter Mrazek, when he was a UFA, did we not say to him, trade this guy right now? His value is at his highest. He played, had a tremendous year, save percentage above .900 on an atrocious team. Now, all of a sudden, you look at the Chicago Blackhawks goaltending situation. They got Arvid Soderblom, who's having a pretty good season. Bounce back here. He was atrocious last year. But he's playing good this year. You got Laurent Brossoit, who's on contract for next year. He's on the IR. You bring in Spencer Knight. Who's your starter? This is your horse moving forward. And then you have Peter Mrazek for another year at $4 million. And he's playing terrible. And no one will want him. And the Panthers were in the market for a goaltender. Why not ship Mrazek back? They went out and got Vitek Vanacek just today, actually. So it's just... should have been done last year. Now I think they're going to be stuck with these three goalies unless you just give Mrazek away and retain some of his salary. But all that aside, A for both teams. This is a great trade, and I want to see how Seth Jones plays now. Because you could tell at times in Chicago, he wasn't interested. He did not want to be there. He was just going through the motions. And all of a sudden, I'm going to go off on a tangent, but isn't it funny how in just one signature, you go from the last place team in the league with not a lot to look forward to in your next 3-4 years. Chicago still needs a lot of work. There's a lot of additions that they need to make to be a competitive team. And all of a sudden, Seth Jones goes from that to, baby, I'm going for the Stanley Cup every year. That's it. Like, I'm on a contending team, which is funny how that works. And another thing that tinged me, Tim, what in common does Dallas and Florida have? If he limits his trades to those two teams, what do those two states have in common that Seth Jones would only allow a trade to those two teams?
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. It's the no income tax. It's huge.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? For a guy who makes $9.5 million, he goes from getting just murdered in Illinois state tax. He must be making $9.5 million. He probably takes home $4 million, maybe $4.5 million. Now he's going to get all of it. Like, he gets his federal tax taken off, but he's going to be making so much more money. Cost of living is less there. Probably more enjoyable life. He's going to be just loving life in Florida. And for all those people, oh, everybody wants to play in Ottawa and everybody wants to play in Winnipeg. I don't see Seth Jones waving his no trade clause to go to those teams. So there is an advantage to being a GM in those markets because players want to go there. Yeah. It is desirable. I'm sorry, Riley, from a Patreon. He's a big Sens fan. But boy, oh boy, it's just obvious. These players, when they have the no move clause, they only waive them for Southern teams. It seems to be the trend that's going around town, unless you're JT Miller and you just want to be in New York and your wife wants to be there. So good trade for both teams. Moving on, Tim, what else happened?
Yeah, this one's kind of a complicated one that I won't get down in the details, but a three-way trade between the Edmonton Oilers, New Jersey Devils, and my own Boston Bruins, that basically the big piece was sending Trent Frederick to the Oilers in exchange for a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick. It's all this. It's just a bunch of moving parts. But Trent Frederick's the name in the deal. This one was not surprising. We kind of knew that he was going to be moved. Basically, the message out of Boston was that there's almost nobody who's not available for the right price, which is what they should be doing right now. And they lost again last night. It's awful. So for Trent Frederick, I think he's a good pickup for them. He kind of adds some good sandpaper. He can fight. He can play. I would probably, he's a third line center, ideally, if not fourth line. But I think he can be a good third line center on a good team. And it's a good pickup for them for not a big cost. So I think it's a good pickup for the Oilers.
What's his injury status? I know he's on the IR right now. Do you have any idea when he's going to be back?
I don't offhand, no. I'm like blocking the Bruins from my mind. Like, yeah, my people text me when they lose, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not watching. I'm watching
just HBO. Expect it. Yeah. Like, for the Edmonton Oilers, this was desperately needed sandpaper. They have no one in their lineup who brings energy to the game. They have no one in their lineup who can stand up to any pushback from the other team. The main guy that they rely on for energy is Corey Perry.
Yeah.
If I'm correct, he's almost 40 years old. So when your energy guy, the guy who fights, the guy who sticks up for people is 40-year-old Corey Perry, something's wrong. In the offseason, they went out. They got Victor Arvidsson. They got Jeff Skinner. They had Adam Henrique from last year. All of those guys,
yeah,
they're all playing terrible. So they needed to revamp and get some fresh blood into this lineup because all the offseason moves they made were failures. So I don't think Frederick is a huge get. I hope that they will make more moves, but he helps. He definitely helps that third line center role. Maybe Henrique moves to fourth line. Maybe Frederick plays the wing on the second line. I don't know. I don't think Frederick is a terrific hockey player, but if he focuses on what he's there to do, which is provide energy, get in on the forecheck, be a pest to play against, I think he can be effective. And I think the Oilers will deploy him in that role. So it's a good trade for Edmonton. Terrible trade for Boston. Boston just sucks at GMing. Don Sweeney's terrible. But I like this move. I do hope they add more because it just seems like this team is lining up again like last year and the year before and the year before that, where it's the McDavid-Draisaitl show. And then after those first two lines, it gets really thin really, really fast.
But yeah. Oilers, the moves they made in the offseason, they just swung and missed on all of them. Yeah. Like Klingberg, I know, was a recent thing, but Arvidsson's terrible. Jeff Skinner's not even in the lineup. You're just not getting, and the older guys are just getting old. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to be done, but it's just with the cap situation, there's not a whole lot of room to maneuver.
It was funny. What was it you told me before the show that they need a puck-moving defenseman and then a young forward who can score? And it's like Broberg Holloway.
Yeah.
100% to a T.
Yeah.
And those guys price themselves out of the market, but they're looking pretty good in St. Louis right now, and they could be very, very much needed in Edmonton. All right. Avalanche acquired journeyman defenseman Ryan Lindgren from the New York Rangers in addition with Jimmy Vesey and Hank Kempf, who cares? And they gave up Calvin DeHaan, a second-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and UC Parson. Do you like this move for the Colorado Avalanche? It's a head-scratcher for me.
I like this move for the Rangers get these guys, get a little bit of value for UFAs, you know, not letting them walk for nothing. And I don't think this makes the team that much worse, even though you're getting pieces off the roster, where if you decide you want to go on a playoff run, and they've been playing better, Zibanejad has been crushing it since JT Miller got there. So I don't think this hurts their chances, even though they're technically losing players off their roster. I don't know if I love the move by Colorado. There's a couple of rumors we're going to talk about with them. Ryan Lindgren is one of those guys, and I compare him to, I know he's a different type of player, but Dan Girardi, where he's just basically only there to play defense. And he just eats pucks to the face and plays the heavy minutes. And he pairs really well with Adam Fox, or at least he used to, but he just hasn't been the same player. There's like all these highlights of him just running over Shesterkin. He just can't stop doing it because he just doesn't have control and he's not the same player. And you have to like Lindgren just because of, like, I don't think anyone's been through more, or put their body through more over the last 3-4 season than he is, but his game has dropped off as a result. So hopefully he can refind it in Colorado. And Jimmy Vesey is such a boring player too. He was supposed to be like this phenom coming out of a Boston, and he's a bottom six forward who's a defensive specialist and doesn't contribute much. So I don't think there's a huge risk based on what you gave up, but I just don't know that based on the limited assets you have and the limited cap room, if that was the best thing you could have done with the options you had.
Well, it ain't moving the needle, right? I think it's a lateral move. I think Lindgren gives you depth, obviously. He's going to be maybe deployed on the PK pretty strongly, but he was once, you know, the Batman or the Robin to Adam Fox's Batman. Those two guys were terrific. And then he just got slow and he got exposed. And it's been happening for the last 2 years. And talking to Rangers fans and people around the organization, they want to get rid of this guy. They were happy to see him leave. And I don't know, it seems like a strange move for the Avalanche when you're trying to push now, win now. You got McKinnon, you traded for Nietzsche, so you got rid of Rantanen. I don't understand this move. And for the Rangers, is this a precursor to moves? Because now that frees up a little bit of room. Lindgren is making a little bit of money. Vesey was making 800 grand. So they have a little bit more money to spend. We'll see what happens there because Adam Fox is on the IR. You got Chris Kreider on the IR. I don't know how long those guys are going to be.
Kreider's
probably not
gone
too long. Yeah. So it's just things are moving. Chris Drury is one of the GMs who just doesn't stand pat. I'm excited to see what he does because this team, like you mentioned, Tim, they are dangerous. You know, I wouldn't want to match up with them first round. Shesterkin could steal a series. So it's one of those instances where we kind of owe it to the players to go for it. And like you said, Zibanejad, he's such a streaky player. He goes on a run and all of a sudden you got Panarin, you bring in JT Miller, you got Trocheck, you got Lafreniere. Like that's a hell of a team. If they're all going and they're motivated.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't want to play that team first round. mean, like, why
if it was them in the second wild card, it's them in Capitals, who do you take? You know,
I'm taking the Rangers. I think I am taking the Rangers.
Yeah.
They're more explosive, but again, I'm an idiot. The Capitals are going to finish 30 points ahead of them. And I just don't trust the Caps. I really don't. Maybe it's my bias against Ovechkin, but we'll see. Good trade for the Rangers. I'm going to give them a grade of a B. And for the Avalanche, I give that a D. I don't understand it. It just doesn't make sense to me. Vesey is a good, reminds me of a Lazar. He's on a different team every single year. He's good at what he does. He's going to score a couple of goals, but he's, again, is he that much better than the guy he's taking the place of on the fourth line? I don't know.
Probably not.
Minnesota Wild, Tim. Who did they get?
They acquired Gustav Nyquist from the Nashville Predators in exchange for a 2026 second round pick. I like this pickup. He's 35 years old. He has 21 points on the year. So he's not really anything, you know, heavy with his offense. But I would say a couple times a year, maybe once a year, he does something really flashy. You're like, oh man, this Nyquist guy is good. Why doesn't he do it more often? He was on Minnesota years ago. So they liked him. They've always liked him. And I think he'll insert nicely. It's a small move, small cost move that can only help him. Minnesota's had some pretty heavy injuries to their forward. So they'll slot right in. I don't think there'll be any kind of adjustment period. So it's a small move that I think will pay off small, but I think only positive things to say about it.
You said small about 15 times there. Is it a small move, Tim?
Small,
very small. Yeah, they do have injury troubles. Kaprizov's been out. Eriksson-Ek's been out. So he does slot right in on that first line, taking Kaprizov's spot right away. And you look at his stats, you know, he consistently puts up 40 points a year. He's one of those guys that you could bounce around the lineup. And once Kaprizov comes back, I think you find him maybe second line, maybe third line. But I think he's more of a skill player. Yeah, it's a good move for a team that doesn't have a lot of assets, doesn't have a lot of money to play with. So good on Billy Guerin going out and getting a guy who can keep up. Because essentially, I think that's what you want. You want a guy who can go out, not embarrass you, be a little bit of an asset, because at this time of the season, if you're not giving up first rounders, if you're not giving up a ton, it's hard to get players that make a difference. And I think Gustav Nyquist, he could be a difference maker if you put him in the right position. He's got that skill set. So I like this move by Billy Guerin. Predators second round pick. It'll be a decent pick, but those essentially are just maybe role player guys. So good on them. He's a UFA. He'll be gone after next year. But it's a nice pickup for the Minnesota Wild. Once Kaprizov comes back, I think we'll start to see who this team really is. All right, Florida Panthers, like I mentioned earlier, got Vitek Vanacek, replaces Spencer Knight. Who cares? Boxers play the lion's share of the games.
Right, so let's talk about some injuries that are going to impact the way that some of these teams are approaching the deadline. There's three major ones, I would think. And this is probably maybe one of the two biggest ones.
Are you going to...
What?
You're going to cry. You're going to cry.
I'm not going to cry. Jack Hughes and I, our relationship has changed. We don't have the same friendship that we used to. That's okay.
Why? So
Jack Hughes,
you moved on?
He's not performing the way that I thought he would. He had the 99-point season two seasons ago, and I think that the Four Nations thing really put a divide between us. So Jack was hurt in a collision the other night with Jack Eichel. He went hard into the boards. I'm sure we've all seen the video. Originally, we thought it was going to be bad. There was even a reporter, but I told John this yesterday, Luke Hughes crying after the game. He wouldn't talk to the press. It's the whole dramatic thing. But now the last 24 hours, he's getting a second opinion. He flew home to New Jersey to see the team's doctors. It's hopeful that it's not as severe as expected, but we hope to hear something more concrete, and we haven't heard that yet. So we'll wait to see what Jack Hughes' situation is. He's obviously going to miss some time. It's not for sure whether he's going to miss the rest of the season or the playoffs or anything like that. But what's interesting is that even despite the injury, the report is that the Devils are still looking to add to their roster. Even if they lose him long term, they still want to go for it this year, which I think they should. So they've been on the lookout for their help in their bottom six and especially down the middle.
Oh, you're done. That's it. Well, I think this all is contingent on Jack Hughes. And it's funny how this worked. The game is played now. We'll talk about that in a second. The GM is secretly going, dislocated shoulder, dislocated shoulder, dislocated shoulder. Get him out of the lineup for 6 weeks. Bring him back for the first round. You get to add a high-end player who makes a lot of money because Jack Hughes is carrying an $8 million salary cap, Mikko Rantanen. So they could potentially gain something with him being out of the lineup. But if he's not, they have no cap space. They got nothing going on. I don't know what you would do to improve this team as far as trades go, but I don't know. The Devils, they once were a very exciting team. I picked them 2 years ago to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. I thought they were on the up and ups, and all of a sudden, they kind of plateaued. They just have just been okay. And for an NHL franchise, it's not where you want to be. They have some good players. Bring in Timo Meier. They feel like he should have done a little bit more when he got here, and he's been okay. But do you see this team being a Stanley Cup champ? Jesper Bratt, Nico Hirschier, bring in Palat. That Stanley Cup pedigree hasn't really translated, obviously, into rings. And I don't know. Look, you have good pieces on the back end. You bring in Brett Pesce last year. I just don't see it. Unfortunately, Markstrom was supposed to be the answer. He's been okay. Do you think bringing in pieces will make this? It'll make a bit. But I don't know how aggressive they should be at the deadline. Maybe you should kind of reevaluate this team at the end of the season, and maybe we move on from a Hirschier. Maybe we move on from a Jesper Bratt, because Jack Hughes is that guy. It's just funny how all these teams, they fall into that little spot where we have a lot of high-end guys who make a lot of money, but we don't have that super, superstar. We don't have those guys that make a difference.
Now, the Devils have lost two in a row. They only 4 wins in their last 10. Meanwhile, the next team right behind them, I would say Columbus is right there. But then the New York Rangers have won 7-3 in their last 10. They've won a couple in a row. They're only 2 points behind the Devil with 2 games in hand. So this is going to get really interesting. And going back to the plateau
thing.
They're
6 points behind the Devils. What are you talking about? 6. Huh? You drunk?
No. 6. Oh, yeah, you're right. My bad.
Tim's not a math guy. Holy boy.
Yeah, a 6 point. But either way, the message is clear. It's really close. And the Devils missed the playoffs last year, which is why I think that they're so insistent on competing this year. You want to show the progress and the forward momentum of your franchise. And one of the reports going around right now is that if Jack Hughes does indeed go on LTIR, which I think is more likely than not, and they have some cap room to play with, they've already called Carolina, according to one report, to let him know they want to be in on Rantanen if Carolina decides to move. So they could be making arguably the biggest move left. So we'll see what this team does and what the news is on Jack.
Well, they do not have a first rounder this year. I don't know how their prospect system looks, but it would be tough to get Rantanen. If Rantanen does hit the open market, I don't see a world where he ends up with the New Jersey Devils. It would be nice. Imagine that. They get him. Re-sign him next year, him and Jack Hughes, how fun that would be. But I bet you there'd be a lot more suitors for him, and they would have a lot more to offer the Carolina Hurricanes. All right, speaking of cap subversion and just working the system, which is perfectly legal. It started with the Chicago Blackhawks years ago. They put Patrick Kane on the LTIR. We saw it with Tampa Bay Lightning, with, what's his name? Their captain.
Stamkos.
No.
Oh.
Who the hell, the Russian guy? I'm drawing a blank.
He's not the captain.
Kucherov, we saw it with the Vegas Golden Knights with Mark Stone. Florida Panthers have officially put Matthew Tkachuk. He's not their captain. I was wrong. The Florida Panthers have officially put Matthew Tkachuk on the LTIR ahead of the trade deadline. And then the quote coming from the team is, conveniently, we hope to get him back for the playoffs. Oh my, how does that work out time-wise? He makes $8.7 million. What do they do with this cap space? First of all, is this okay that they're doing this, Tim?
He makes 9.5, but they have 8.7 in cap space right now. And that's factoring in what they brought in for Seth Jones. So, yeah, I think it is okay. The injury seems to be legit, and they obviously want him in the lineup. So I'm not quite as bothered by this as I have been by some of the other teams, especially since we're only in March. So it's not like it's, I don't know, we've seen this handled other ways, but yeah, I think you're going to see another example of the rich getting richer. You're going to see them go out and probably make a major splash or two later this week because they've got all this cap room, and you're not going to see him back until the playoffs start. So sometimes the pieces fall that way, and it's looking like that's the case for this year's Panthers.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I think every good team, if they have players that are injured or needing to get healed up, you just take them out of the lineup and you say to a veteran player like Matthew Tkachuk, the guy's played a million games in the last few years. Hey, man, take 6 weeks off. You can skate with the team. You can get rehabbed. Come back 100%. I firmly believe game one of the playoffs, this guy will be ripping around the ice. like he hasn't missed a beat. He'll be fresh. He'll be motivated. And every other team will go, that sucks. Like, that's not allowed. That's not allowed. Remember Mark Stone with the Vegas Golden Knights? People thought he was never going to play again. Oh, his neck. Oh, what? We're so worried about him. Game one. Boom. He looks fantastic. Finishing checks. Plays 20 minutes. Like, just nothing happened. Until they close this loophole. Until they find out some verbiage to inject into the CBA. This is fantastic. I think it's great. You're going to see teams going into the playoffs. It'll happen where the salary cap is like 120 million and they just add pieces because guys just stay. Oh, I'm injured. LTIR. It's beautiful. So good for the Florida Panthers. Good for Matthew Tkachuk. He gets 6 weeks to heal up 100% because you know he's hurt. He wouldn't not play the final game of the Four Nations Cup and sit on the bench and watch guys in that pivotal game. So we know he's hurt. He's not milking it. But I'm sure, Tim, if they were on the bubble trying to get into the playoffs, he would be playing. So the luxury of being the Panthers in a sure playoff spot is you get to sit this guy down, then you get to bring in a big piece. And when you look at this team, there's not a lot of holes. So where do you go from there? You bring in Seth Jones, he shores up the back end. All of a sudden, you have the luxury of going, okay, let's go. Let's maybe go get a right winger, a left winger. Go get someone to help out the depth, the third and fourth lines, because they're absolutely stacked. So good for the Florida Panthers. They all of a sudden, with him going up on the LTIR, are my Stanley Cup favorites. They vault the Toronto Maple Leafs. They vault the Capitals. They vault every other team. If they add somebody, it's a dangerous team. It's just not fair, but I love it. I'm definitely here for it. What are the odds, Tim, that they do close this loophole? Because it's becoming almost predictable every single year. Oh, a guy gets hurt. Yeah, he's gone. They're going to push it till the start of the playoffs. What are the odds they close this loophole?
I would say not very high. I think it's good for the league. It's good for the players. It's good for the teams that are competitive. And usually those are the ones that have more sway among that community anyway. So I don't think there's really no reason other than other teams, you know, shaking their heads saying it's not fair, but it's
at some point, balance. It's another team. It circumvents the competitive balance, the moral ethics of it, because you're cheating. Because the way they could do it is if you would have a third party doctor go in and say, okay, you want to go on the long-term LTIR, you make more than $5 million or whatever it is, and you come back playoffs game one. I'm going to go and test you to see if you're healthy a month before the season ends, 2 weeks, 1 week. But again, the player could lie and say, oh, ouch, ouch, it hurts. Ouch, ouch, you're on my hair. Yeah. So I don't know any way around this, but it's becoming, you can almost set your watch by it. Oh, it's February 20th. Someone's going down and he's going to be gone for a month and a half and the playoffs are going to start and he's going to have a miraculous recovery. So yep. Good for him. Speaking of injuries, Tim.
Yeah, Brad Marchand, the latest on the list.
You don't like talking about him. You want me to handle this one?
Yeah, I can cover the basics. But basically, he's out week to week with an upper body injury. This is the guy that I would say was not super likely to be moved, but he was certainly a possibility and an interesting name that they were getting calls about him. I think most teams would like to add him into their mix. He makes a lot of teams better. He's got a lot of playoff experience. He's got a leadership. He's got that grit that makes really good for the postseason. So I don't know, and I kind of never know what to think about this. When you have a guy that's hurt right now, but you know he's going to be healthy when the playoffs come around, what's the risk factor among teams? I know it's a case-by-case basis, but like if you're a GM, are you okay taking a guy who's hurt right now knowing he'll be back, or does that make you nervous?
I don't think it makes you. Not a guy of this ilk, because I think he's proven throughout the years he can seamlessly just fit into a lineup anywhere. He's done it internationally. He doesn't have to be the star player. We saw it in the Four Nations Cup where he played a secondary role. He could easily slide into any roster, not rock the boat, be a good guy in the locker room, and make an impact. So I wish they trade him. I don't think they will, just based on PR reasons. And, you know, we're still in it. We want to build for the future. He's our guy. Just was named captain this year. So I don't know if they get rid of him, but the Bruins are out of it. I think we can stick a fork in this team. They've won 3 of their last 10. They've looked awful. Absolutely awful. So if I'm Don Sweeney, I would do a lot of things if I was Don Sweeney, but I'm gutting this roster. And I would trade Brad Marchand if he allowed me to. He's got a partial no move clause, but I'm sure if you're Marshy, would you want to be moved though?
I think yes. And we talked about this last week. He was 22 when he won the cup. He's 30. 6 now. Like, he's just, he should be playing for a contender. He should be playing for another ring. And I think he wants that. I think he probably wants to be a Bruin more. He's just one of those guys. It's the family. You're part of the city at this point. But I hope he does get moved, and I'd like to see him. I think he deserves it. I think it'd be really exciting to see.
Well, let's move on to some rumors, according to some hockey insiders. We'll start with the Carolina Hurricanes. Their big acquisition a month ago. They went out. They swung for the fences like they have in the last couple of years. You got to commend them for that. They get Mikko Rantanen from the Colorado Avalanche. He comes in with the expectations maybe behind closed doors that he would sign a long-term deal and they wouldn't have to worry about this. Well, lo and behold, they've been offering contracts. Mikko Rantanen has saying, no, not sure, not sure. I don't know. Well, it's deadline day. Tomorrow is the day. And if you're the Carolina Hurricanes, do you waste Martin Nikas, all the draft picks you gave up, for a rental? And by the way, since acquiring Rantanen, the Canes are a sub 500 team. They're 4-6-1. He is not putting up many points. He's not lighting the world on fire. He hasn't really gelled with Aho. He doesn't really fit in like they thought that he would. So what do you do with him? He's uberly valuable, Tim. Quick answer. Does he go?
Yes. I say yes. And just the fact that he's not willing to commit, he hasn't said no, but he hasn't agreed to it. And he is not likely to do that by the deadline, which means they don't want to let him walk for nothing. And it's a weird thing. Like, it's different from the Marner situation, but for example, because he doesn't fit in. It's a rare situation. We have a great player and a great team and a great coach, but for some reason, it just doesn't work. You've seen that enough. So it was one thing if they had, like, if they're, 8-3 during this stretch and he's putting up points and it's still risky, take him on knowing you could let him walk for something, but for nothing, but you know that you have something working for the playoffs. He's not producing. The team's not producing. You risk losing him for nothing. So I think you have to move him.
That'd be a tough blot on your resume. You get this guy, you're going to win the Stanley Cup. All of a sudden it's a 180 in a matter of like 2 weeks. Oh, we got to trade him. He's not going to resign. We suck. We're a bad hockey team. We're out of the Stanley Cup contention. Because that's what it is. You're punting. Nietzsche was having a very, very strong year, and he would have been a good piece for your future. You get Rantanen. They're not getting a player that's better than those two guys. And potentially the draft pick won't be that high because you're trading him to a contender. So big time whoopsie for the Carolina Hurricanes getting Mikko Rantanen. But I agree. I do think they trade him. I think they're a conservative organization. Maybe not the last couple of years, but you have to get something for this guy. All right, moving on. Braden Schenn. Trade is less likely. Blues have been playing well. They're going to go for the Stanley Cup, but does it matter? Who cares, Tim?
I don't care about the Blues. I do care about Braden Schenn. I think he would be a great pickup. And speaking of like all the teams that could use a guy who can play both center and wing, like Florida, like maybe you make that work if Tkachuk is out long term. So just something to keep an eye on. But the Blues, there's lots of rumors and there's fewer now just because they keep winning and staying in the mix.
Yeah, 6-2-2 in their last 10, playing good hockey. And they're one of those veteran teams. You get them in the playoffs, you never know. You never know what can happen. All right, what else?
Darren Dreger said the Sabres have received numerous offers, quote-unquote, strong offers for futures on a number of players. J.J. Paterka's in the list. Alex Tuch is on the list. Dylan Cousins on the list. The Sabres don't need draft picks. They've had a lot of them. They've used a lot of them. They've got young players. They need legit roster players. So Kevin Adams remains open to big moves, but it could be a quiet deadline. Basically, nobody knows. They could do this. They could do that. No one knows. And Chris Pronger, of all people, responded to some of this stuff on Twitter. And he's like, at what point do you just stick it out? Like, clearly it's not working, but you've brought in a lot of new players. You've let a lot of players walk, and all those other players have gone on to succeed in other places. Like, how do you fix this broken system? You go let Cousins and Tuck walk. You know they're going to both kind of win a cup in the next 3 years. That's just how it's worked. So what do you do if you're Buffalo?
It's a trickle-down effect. You have to get top-down, Tim. I've always said that. The owner, his will is there. He wants to win. But I feel like the president, the GM, the coaches, it all needs to be revamped and find the right guy to run this franchise. Because they have had great players, like you said, and they go on and they have successful careers. But Buffalo was slowly but surely turning into the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Tampa Bay Devil Rays of the MLB, where they develop players and they turn out to be really good. And then other teams come in and they go, okay, let's see, who do we want this year? You know what? I'm going to go after, give me Dylan Cousins. Yeah, he'll be good. And then he goes on and they have a fantastic career. So that's what's happening with Buffalo. I've even heard reports that teams are going after Quinn Hughes. or Owen Power, they're kicking the tires on him. And it's just amazing what's turned into Buffalo, because they have great players, but you have to get a president, you have to get a GM, you have to get a coaching staff. That is just all on the same page. And that hasn't happened in Buffalo in over a decade. Unfortunately, they've tried. They've thrown everything at the wall. You bring back Lindy Ruff. I don't think how in line he is with Kevin Adams, and I don't think he's in line with the president. So it's hard to do. It's hard to implement, but they need to just have a fundamental change at the top, because it ain't working. So I get with Chris Pronger saying, "Oh, keep them together." That won't change. I don't think that's the answer. All right, what else, Tim?
The next one here is from Pierre LeBrun. Says the Blue Jackets continue to get calls on Ivan Provorov. We'll keep listening, but because they're in the hunt and because they like the player and the player likes being in Columbus, it's going to take quite a package to get him. So most likely he gets re-signed and they want to continue this conversation for contracts. But there's another player that's pretty high on the list that we both said would be a great, you know, pickup, where he can kind of play all situations and be like, run the second power play and be your third or fourth best defenseman. So we'll see what happens with Provorov.
I think he stays. He's done well in Columbus. He fits in nicely. You know, he's a solid stay-at-home defenseman, puts up some points. He's good. They'll give him, I was going to say 7, but I don't know what his number is next year.
I think
he sticks around. They have the money. Well, he's making 6.75 right now.
Yeah, okay. But he's just, but his point days are behind him, though. He's putting up points earlier.
Yeah, I know, he's 28, but you got to pay to play, man. All right, what else?
The Canucks, the latest on Brock Besser. Vancouver apparently did make an extension offer to him earlier in the season. That offer is no longer on the table. That doesn't mean that they're not still talking and negotiating, but right now there's no offer on the table. So I think most likely he gets moved, but just one of those things that's very fluid, change by the hour.
Probably one of the most highly sought after wingers in this free agency or deadline day. I'm like losing my mind with my words. I don't know what's going on. I'm mixing up words, players, but this guy, talk about Florida Panthers. If you want some help, you be knocking on his door. The guy's going to put up a gazillion goals. He's a point and shoot player. He's an absolute stud. You go after him. And why? Going back to the Chris Pronger point, why would Vancouver want this guy back? He's been there for what, 10 years now? They haven't done anything of note. So you have to get rid of him. You have to move on. You have to have change in order to see if you can buck the trend on what's going on in Vancouver. So yeah, he's going to be gone too. I like that.
All right, just a couple more quick ones here before we get to our quick hits. Kevin Weeks said he's talking to lots of sources and people are calling about the Blackhawks, Ryan Donato, who has really kind of researched his career over the last season and a half. He's versatile. He can do special teams. He can play the center or the wing. He has 18 even strength gold, which is pretty high. So we'll most likely see him move because he's a pending UFA.
Yeah, most points, even strength points in the last month. I think he's in the top 5. He's right up there with Draisaitl and players like that, Matt Duchene. You look back on deadlines, and we're going to do this at the Bleacher Report show on Friday. You look at the players who have the most impact. It's never the high-end guys who move around. It's always the second-tier guys like Barbashev last year, guys who come in and do it all. This is the guy. I've watched him closely last year. I've been following him this year. He plays alongside Bedard. He's perfectly capable of playing first-line minutes, but you can throw him down anywhere in the lineup, and the guy produces. He's a solid player. He has an absolute cannon for a shot. One of the heavier shots I've seen in the NHL. So this guy. If I'm a GM, I'm definitely kicking the tires on this guy. He will get a first rounder for him. That's how valuable he could be in the playoffs for a team.
He's a great passer, too. I've seen him on the power play with Bedard. A couple more quick ones here. Elliot Friedman said that, quote unquote, Adam Larson is a guy Toronto has called on a few times, which I think is a good fit. He said, I've heard Seattle basically told them to lose our number, stop calling about this guy. Then they're not moving them. So just kind of keep an eye on that one. And the last one here is Colorado. They've already made one big move, as we know. They're still expecting more moves, looking to add a 2C. And I thought about this, and they did that last year with Casey Mittelstadt. I don't think he was, you know, you had super high expectations. He's not going to be an 80-point guy, but I think he wanted him to solidify that second-line center behind McKinnon, and it just hasn't worked out. He's still in the lineup. He's okay. He's part of the team, but he's not what they were hoping for, so they're probably looking to add another second-line center and bump him down to the third.
All right. I think that's a smart move if they could pull it off. Kits, Tim, and get out of here.
Yes. Friend of the show. This is a sad one. Friend of the show, Kirby Doc. Season is over. He's getting shoulder surgery. cannot catch a break. I think we thought the first few were just bad luck and circumstantial stuff. He's officially got the injury prone bug on him. There's no avoiding that at this point.
He's a band-aid.
The Capitals extended Charlie Lindgren, 3 years, $9 million total. So they have both him and Logan Thompson locked up for the next year or couple of years at under $9 million per season. So great move there. The Dallas Stars have approached Wyatt Johnston, who's having another great season. He's taken a step forward on pace for about 75 points with an 8-year contract that would pay him slightly over $8 million a season. I think that it would be a great bargain, knowing the cap is going up, and you expect him to be above a point per game guy for the next several years. So we'll see.
He's on his entry level deal right now, so they have control of him for a few more years. But boy, what a luxury the Dallas Stars have! They have so many good young players, and he's turning down an $8 million deal.
I don't think he's turned it down. He just has not accepted it yet. So
that's a nice deal. I think they get that done quick. All right, last one.
One of the top moves or trade targets was Jake Evans out of Montreal, but they re-signed him yesterday, 4 years at $2.85 million per. So take him off your trade target list. He was something a lot of teams were calling on. And the last one is a fun one. This is great. Friend of the show, Matthew Olivier, signed 6 years at $3 million per to stay in Columbus. Great contract for a great guy, and what a player.
Yeah, we were bouncing around ideas on our Patreon here on our Slack channel, wondering what his number is, because he hasn't made over $1.1 million his whole career. He's not too young. He's 28 years old. So this takes him to 34. And as a tough guy, that's old for him, but having a career year, 12 goals, 21 points, really making a huge impact on this team. It's a big deal for him. We were joking around when he was on the show off air. I'm like, what's your number? What are we going to sign for? And he's like, I love Columbus. I want to stay here. So good for him. $3 million, 6 years. That's great. Good on the team for rewarding that guy for just playing his heart out this year and really like taking on a huge role for a guy who's been quiet his whole career as far as points. His career high in goals was 5, you know? So good for Matthew Olivier.
Do you think that this deal is kind of representative of players like this becoming valuable again, and then you start to see others like it? Or is he just kind of a unicorn that there's not a lot of guys that will replicate that?
Well, it's hard to do. It's hard to be that physical presence and fight, but also be a good hockey player. Because you, when you're younger, you skew one way or the other. But I think this is a sign of maybe players being able to do it all and not focusing so much on fighting and being able to play and be productive. I was watching the game. He's out there the last minute of the game, and they're up by one. So yeah. He's playing meaningful minutes, and he's doing it all, not just scoring goals. The coach trusts him to be on the ice to protect a lead at the last minute of the game. So. It's I hope this is a sign of the same things to come, because this is the unicorn player now. It used to be puck moving a defenseman or a small fleet footed forward who can make passes. Dime a dozen. That's what we've been churning out for the last 3-4 years. Now it's like, gosh, I wish we had a rugged power forward who could, you know, be good in the offensive zone, who can have some physical presence, who can throw, you know, his weight around and fight. I wish we could have that. In my age, those guys were everywhere. Everybody could fight. Everybody was hitting. Not a lot of good hands on him, but it was just easy to find. So, yeah, I hope so. Get more, you know, Marcus Foligno's. Get more Nick Foligno's. I don't know. The Foligno brothers are the only guys I can think of. But good for Matthew. Friend of the show. I'll have to give him a call. That's how I roll. I can call guys and talk to them. They're superstars. All right. Anything else, Tim?
No, to come check out our Bleacher Report streams tomorrow and Friday. Friday especially. 2 hours live reaction. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep, we'll be on what time? 1:30 tomorrow?
3 o'clock tomorrow Eastern. That's only a 30-minute preview. And then on Friday, it'll be 1:30 to 3:30 Eastern. Like I said, it'll be live reactions to stuff.
Nice. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you later. Cheers.